Hello and welcome to Worlds Apart. One unforeseen yet vividly manifested consequence of the conflict in Ukraine is the rediscovery of national interest among the countries that are not directly involved in this war. Squeezed between the rock of Western sanctions pressure and the hard place of their own economic and security realities, many nations have been forced to make carefully calibrated choices instead of following somebody else's lead. How is this newly discovered geopolitical maturity reshaping the entire international system? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Zafar Nawaz Jaspal, professor at the School of Politics and International Relations at Quaid-e-Azam University in Pakistan. Dr. Jaspal, it's great to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Now, in one of your interviews, you talked about how Pakistan needed to break with this psychological dynamic of codependence. And you were discussing both the case in Ukraine and your broader relationship with the West, this tendency of always having to take parts. And I found this very interesting because I think this is a very accurate description of what's going on in the world today, and not only with Pakistan, but many other countries when they have to truly focus on what's in their interest. And it's no longer a rhetorical point. It's actually necessitated by life, by hard life and hard choices. Do you think we would have been at this place, in this place, if it weren't for the conflict in Ukraine?
I think that Pakistan always supported the conflict resolution and right of self-determination. Pakistan is against the, you can say, foreign intervention within the state, whether it's a theoretical or a practical. That's the reason that Pakistan is avoiding what the Americans have started, this democracy summit, in which they wanted to raise this upholding the rules of the world order. And in this world order, which was sustaining the Americans' hegemony, though we have wanted good relation with the United States, but we were distancing it. Similarly, in the Ukraine case, Pakistan is very much supportive to the Ukrainians' right of self-determination and their right to govern themselves. And in this context, Pakistan, or I personally believe, Pakistan do not support the Russians' military operation in the Ukraine, which is termed in the Western literature as Russian invasion. So in this context, of course, it limits, but on the other side, if you see, the geostrategic dynamics are such as that Pakistan cannot ignore. It's, you can say, two decades efforts to build its warmer relation with the Moscow. So that's why we have been stuck. If you recall our representative in the United Nations General Assembly, what he maintained, he categorically stated, we are not supporting the Russians, we are not opposing, but at the same time, we abstain from the resolution because we want this resolution is not serving the purpose to end the conflict. So we are not here to criticize anyone, but we want it to the end of the conflict.
But Dr. Jaspal, I think this is a very important point because the ability to see the situation in all its complexity, rather than in black and white and taking sides, is actually a very important marker of psychological maturity. And it is usually the children who give each other either or ultimatums. Either you are with us or you are against us. Adults tend to be far more sort of sophisticated in how they go about building their relationship. And I wonder, why do you think the West, or the United States in particular, which sees itself as the only adult in the international community, the only adult who has to decide for everybody else, why do you think they put such a stark, divisive choice before the rest of the world on the issue of Russia? Now, I would understand if they treated Russia in such a way. That's fine. But they also put the rest of the world before the choice of either you are with us or against us. Do you think that's a wise choice? And do you think that's an adult choice?
I think that the era of either with us or with them is over. I fully understand when we focus on these kind of the things, we have to keep in mind during the Cold War, the non-alignment movement was denying either with us or with them. But this slogan became very consequential for Pakistan after 9/11, when the Americans told us either with us or with them. It was working because United Nations Security Council sanctioned the Operation Enduring Freedom in Afghanistan. But now we are living in a multipolar world. It's no more a unipolar world. In Europe, in Euro-Atlantic setting, Russia is assertive. And in Asia-Pacific setting, China is assertive. Americans have failed to contain or check Russia since it has started from Bucharest summit of the NATO in 2008. Russia captured Georgia's
breakaway republics. Georgia's, but I'm sorry for correcting you. Russia didn't capture them because they are not part of Russia's territory. They are recognized by Russia as independent states.
That I'm saying, when the Russia captured two provinces of Georgia, then Crimea, and then it is here, the Americans failed to protect the independence and sovereignty of those regions. So there is. Similarly, it tried to create some kind of a thing in the context of what you call it, in the context of Taiwan, but the Chinese assertiveness forced them to back out. So in this context, Americans are not dependent on Quad to contain China, on India to contain China. So this era of either with us or with them is over. It's not a mature approach. That's why the Americans, when asked us to vote against the Russians, we refused. Similarly, our prime minister accidentally was in Moscow, but we didn't support the Russians' action in the Ukraine. Though we were there at a bilateral level, we landed, we didn't wrap up the, it was not diplomatically correct, and we maintained our bilateral negotiation with the Moscow and return according to the schedule. So the era of either with us or with them is over.
Well, Dr. Jaspal, both Russia and China to some extent have been pushing against this American pressure to submit them to, you know, one set of rules beneficial for the Americans. But do you think Washington could have foreseen this kind of effect on other countries, not only on Russia and China, but for example, on Pakistan, on India, on South Africa, on Brazil, Argentina? Many of those countries are involved in very painstaking decision-making process when they have to weigh in their own priorities versus the consequences and the costs of not agreeing with the Americans. Do you think that kind of effect is in American interest? And do you think they were after it, after all?
I think that the sanctions have been hurting the American allies, as well as the Americans' adversarial states, or the states which are not on the same page of the US. For instance, the sanctions, they hurt us. That's why Pakistan and Russia plan to build the pipeline, gas pipeline. And we are not starting on this work because of the fear of third-party sanctions. The sanctions hurt Pakistan and Iran pipeline. The sanctions are hurting the European economy. My understanding is that with the passage of time, these sanctions or the threat of the sanctions will be going to lose the impact. Why they are going to lose the impact? Because if you see, even now, when they put the sanctions, the India started importing double, triple barrels of the oil from Russia. India imported S-400 missiles. The Americans passed in 2017 a sanctions act that anyone who is purchasing the military hardware from Russia automatically under that act become under the American sanctions. Turkey, in 2001, 2002, when they purchased S-400, they witness or experience the sanction. But for the Indian, the Americans make an amendment. That's the reason. And interestingly, there's a war in Ukraine, sanctions against Russia. The third squadron of the S-400 missiles moved from Russia to India recently. And there was no hue and cry, neither in Europe nor in America. It means they are forced to go for a selective sanctions, and they will be losing, or the American sanctions will be seen ineffective tool to pursue or influence the behavior of other states.
So what I'm hearing you say is that in picking up a battle with Russia to punish Russia and to make it obey with the so-called Western-led democratic world, the Westerners and the Americans in particular are encouraging a very different, a similar sort of behavior, actually, among other nations when they not only continue to pursue deals that are in their own self-interest, but they also are far more conscious about political choices that they are making. Do you think that's ultimately in the interest of the Western-led world? Aren't they actually losing it, the exact thing that they're fighting for with Russia?
Look, this is important because there's an interesting case. When they put this sanction on the Western countries, I mean on the Russia, and they prohibit that you will not purchase these things from there, at the same time, they are driving them indirectly, their dependency on them. The problem with the NATO countries is that they are dependent too much on the United States. If you recall, when this second gas pipeline started the constructing from the Russia to the Germany, the Trump administration was upset. The Trump administration was upset because they wanted to sell the LNG to the Europeans. And the Europeans said that it's costly for us. So these sanctions are also a mean to, you can say, divert the resources of certain allied countries towards your own economy so that it can benefit you rather than the other. So this is the way, but we have to see the countries which have a, you can say, securities are capable to stand on their own, like India. It is not dependent on, United States for its security or for its survival. Certainly, India can deny it, and they make an amendment in their sanctions rules. So this is the way. It's an indirect way to divert the economies of your allies towards yourself.
Well, you can even call it, I think some of the Russian analysts suggested that the anti-Russian sanctions should be called anti-EU sanctions, because not only they are benefiting the United States a great deal, but they are actually directly hurting the European economy. Well, but it's up to the Europeans to make up their mind. What is up to us right now, Dr. Jaspal, is to take a very short break, but we will be back in just a few moments. Stay tuned.
Если находили московские телефоны или что, убивали в хлам.
Нас такие отходили, просто заливали бензином с канистр, подпаливали и уходили.
Люди очень боятся, чтобы сюда назад не вернулась Украина.
Детей можете отдельно собрать, сейчас закончу сладкая розанка.
Главный принцип – все, что собирают люди в России, донести непосредственно в руки нуждающимся здесь, на территории Донбасса.
Well, Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Zafar Nawaz Jaspal, professor at the School of Politics and International Relations at Qaid e Azam University in Pakistan. Dr. Jaspal, before the break, we discussed this somewhat childish, or you can call it infantile American approach to foreign policy. Either you're with us or you're against us. And I think there is an alternative. It was there in place even before the recent visit by Chinese President Xi to Moscow. But I think in the aftermath of this visit, this new paradigm is far better articulated. And what Russia and China are suggesting, at least when it comes to their bilateral contacts, but perhaps even more, even broader internationally, is a relationship that has a much lesser emphasis on exclusivity. In fact, they don't demand that exclusivity at all. They have a more room for understanding each other's differences and conflicts while still putting a priority on having that relationship as a container for everything else that can be solved within it. Is that only a trait of the Russian-Chinese relationship, or they behave in a similar manner with their partners, including Pakistan?
I think that the Chinese and the Russians' relationship will be having a positive impact on the Central Asian states, and it will be going to strengthen this BRI projects or influence the BRI projects in the West Asia or Middle East or Arabian Peninsula or a Persian Gulf, whatever you call it. And certainly, it will bring a peace in Pakistan's neighborhood, because if the Russians and Chinese join hands, they are in a better position to manage the Afghanistan affair and also our China-Pakistan economic corridor. So definitely, if there is a bilateralism between Russians and the Chinese, it will be going to have a positive impact on Pakistan's economic projects, especially which are sponsored, financed by the China.
Mm-hmm. Now, you speak about Pakistan in a somewhat passive sense, Russia and China, influencing the events in this neighborhood. But don't you think that the times are also requesting a more active position, not only from Pakistan, but many other regional powers, be it Iran, Turkey, perhaps even India? I know you have a policy of neutrality, but a policy of neutrality, I suppose, doesn't mean that you have to sit and wait until Russia and China figure out everything else.
Look, we are positively trying to balance. We don't want it to be in a camp, but you know that in the international politics, it's easier to say that you are a neutral. But it's difficult to be a neutral, especially a state like Pakistan, which is a very much located geographically. It's a linchpin state, and it's a pivot in the Asia kind of a state, which is a big state with the fifth biggest population, nuclear power, having a strategic contest within the region, and having a decisive role to play in the global politics. So it's such, for such a state, neutrality is not an answer. Of course, Pakistan has adopted a strict bilateralism that we can maintain on issue basis, but we are hearing the dictation or the dictatorial authoritarian dictation from the US or sometimes from the others. But the Chinese are not vocal on this. But if you see, whether we like it or not, when the entire Western world refuse to own or participate in this, Olympic, Winter Olympics, Pakistan was there. When everyone was talking that distance from Russia, Pakistani Prime Minister visited the Russia. Now when Western-led nations invited us, or Americans pressurized Pakistan, or indirectly, or our foreign minister visiting the US frequently, but to participate in this democracy summit, which is basically indirectly against the China. They didn't invite the China and Turkey. So Pakistan refused to participate. We expressed that we had desired to maintain a good relations prosperous relations with the United States, but not at the cost of our friendly states.
Absolutely. And can I ask you specifically about that? Because I keep hearing that from many Pakistani thinkers and officials that you want to have a pragmatic, fair relationship with the United States after having done a lot of heavy lifting for them in Afghanistan, losing a lot of your soldiers, losing a lot of treasure, not getting even a basic gratitude in return, and yet here you are saying again that despite all those dictatorial issuances from the West, you want to have a pragmatic relationship or good relationship with the United States. What is your picture of a good or balanced relationship in the United States? Because, I mean, I'm tempted even to ask whether the United States is capable of having a relationship, a proper relationship, you know, back and forth with any other country, rather than a narcissistic arrangement when they want everything for themselves, giving nothing in return. So what's your view of a good relationship with that country?
It's very simple. By good relationship, I mean it can be a degree that from one spectrum to the other spectrum. Pakistanis are not clear that the United States cannot be our strategic partner because it has chosen India. And we were bandwagoning the United States in order to balance the India in the regional context. Now, if the Americans are assisting, supporting the Indians, naturally our choice on the strategic chessboard is no more. Yes, on the economic chessboard, we have a good opportunities. The United States is one of the biggest trade partners of the US. And Americans definitely don't like to lose a fifth biggest market in the world in a population terms, though we have a lesser purchasing power, but we have a bigger consumer. So we can maintain in that. When I say strict bilateralism, I mean that we can follow the issue-based relationship. So my one issue, let's say Americans have a strategic partnership, which is a threshold alliance partnership, or they're a threshold ally, basically, then it means that I should not mind it. Let them to go. But I can maintain where education, technology, where the Americans have cooperation. So my good relationship hereby means what is practically available, keeping in mind the Americans' foreign strategic priorities. And within that, I try to adjust myself. So instead of expecting everything which I used to expect, no, I'm no more their known, you can say, most allied state. And at the same time, Americans are also realizing that if they are not giving us and we are not expecting, how to behave with us.
Mm-hmm. Now, we mentioned the issue of Afghanistan, where Pakistan, as I said, did a lot of heavy lifting for the Americans. And I don't know if you would find this comparison appropriate, but I think something similar is happening in Ukraine right now, when the Ukrainians are doing a lot of sacrificing for the sake of the so-called Western democratic world, indeed losing their people, losing their treasure, losing their developmental prospects for the sake of Western interests. Do you think they will get the gratitude or the support of the West as they hope for? Do you think it will last for a considerable period of time? Because the reason I'm asking, and it's a very tendentious question, because I think the Pakistanis hoped for the same and did and got very little in return.
Well, I think that it's too much in the case of Pakistan, and our analysts are saying that we were fighting. No. In the first Afghan war, we had a choice, either to fight inside Afghanistan or wait for the Russians on our own border. So we wanted to maintain a buffer. So that was a strategy that worked out. Of course, we started reacting even before 1979, and Americans practically intervened in the Afghan jihad when the Reagan announced $4.2 billion, you can say, aid package. So it's not the same way. And in the case of war on terrorism, yes, they asked us either with us or with them. We played independently also. If you read the Americans after their withdrawal, the American journals, the American analysts, they are alleging Pakistan. During the even war on terrorism, we were a most allied, non-NATO ally, but we were at the same time not trusted by the Americans. That means that Pakistan was maintaining its independence wherever it requires. So that's why we didn't practically, frankly speaking, if somebody asked me that, do I blame the Americans if they are ditching me today? No, that's wrong. I was on my own. I'm very realist. Yes, in the case of the Ukraine, if the Ukrainians think that they are fighting for their own independence, sovereign existence, then of course they should be indebted to the Western countries. They are supporting them. If they are thinking that they are fighting for the defense of the liberal democratic world, I think they will be the losers. America, look, great powers are superpowers. They treat the smaller states as a pawn on the chessboard. They look their interests, their strategic calculation. If I'm fit in that, okay. If I'm not fit, it's not acceptable. So in the realist world, it's a stupidity by the policymakers or by the, you can say, opinion makers within Pakistan or even in Ukraine in the coming years, that we fought for them and they should give us. No, it's a time-tested. It's our choices.
And if I may ask you, we only have about a minute left, but I think it's a very important question. I heard you say before that the interest of Russia, China, Pakistan, Iran overlap in Afghanistan. We all have a stake in that country being stable, more or less, and perhaps even developing economically. That would, you know, boost our own interdependence, economic interdependence and development. Now, the Americans and the West can no longer provide security to Afghanistan. I think that's pretty clear. But do you think they could be in the position of providing insecurity to Afghanistan through their support of various militant groups or otherwise for the specific reason of destabilizing both the region and many of the enemies that happen to be in that region, Russia and China included?
I think that Afghanistan is still prone to proxy war. There's an anarchy. Militant groups are there, whether it's a Daesh, Al-Qaeda, Uzbek, or the Central Asian other militant groups, Uyghurs, Chechens, everyone is there. And these groups can be exploited by any state. Afghanistan, if you just Google CIA army, it is said that more than 3,000 plus CIA army is still in Afghanistan, according to the published sources. So the Americans know the Afghanistan, they have their connections there. They raised in the 22 decades an Afghan elite, though it is now on the sideline. And in this raising the Afghan elite, they have a still there, they have a stakes there. So for spoiling, if the Americans wants to play a spoiler role in Afghanistan, they can.
Dr. Jaspal, we have to leave it there. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again on Worlds Apart. We'll be right back.